It's time for the Susan Taylor Podcast, where we discuss the yoga of mind, medicine, and healing. Author of Feeling Good Matters, Sexual Radiance, and the Vital Energy Program, Dr. Taylor imparts authentic knowledge and practical tools that inspire, educate, and empower us to be a healing force for positive change. So join us and take your life and our planet to the next level.
Hello and welcome to episode 70, Fasting Strategies, Which One is Best? In today's episode, I'd like to discuss the four strategies of fasting, the benefits of each, and their counterindications. And I'd like to host some questions from the community, which I'll talk about. So let's get started with the comparison of the four fasting strategies that I've pulled from the literature. First, we have the water fast. And I used to be a strong advocate of a multi-day water fast, but in conducting extensive research with myself during my graduate school when I was doing fasting, I realized that it's not really the best strategy for most. Having a clean, nourishing diet prior is a serious issue with water fasting, and very few people actually, you know, have a diet that's so pure, clean, and nourishing that they can really conduct a water fast. And most importantly, I believe that it can actually be dangerous for many, and that's because when you fast, you release fat-soluble toxins that are stored in your fat. And as I mentioned, unless you've optimized your diet, your detox pathways are going to be filled with toxins, and they're going to create and contribute even more health complications. I've seen it, I've done it within myself. And also with water fasting, as with any fasting, which I'll talk about today, how you start a fast and how you end a fast is a real secret to the success of the fast. And I always ultimately settle on the overnight fast that supplies many of the nutrients that your body needs, and it also supports the detox pathways. That's a key in any kind of fasting. And, you know, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. I've talked to many of you over and over about the overnight fast because it's in all my books, my tapes, etc. And there was a paper in Science that I looked at, A Time to Fast, and it did review the four different types of fasting, and that's where I got these four fasting strategies and their metabolic and cellular responses. And that was more important to me to share with you today to give you some of that. And we're talking about, you know, the water fast, as I just mentioned, that's in there. But I just wanted to start with that. But it's always the first fast that I'd like to talk about is really the classic caloric restriction, where your daily calorie intake is decreased by 15 to 40%. And that's not really what we call a fast. When I did fasting, I defined it as when your body goes into self-autolysis or digestion, self-digestion, autolysis, where the cells start to feed on themselves. That's ultimately what fasting is all about, but that's not really what I'm talking about today. I'm giving you an idea from this Science paper. So as I mentioned, the classic caloric restriction was the first they talked about, and there are many benefits, and they found that it increased life extension, reduced oxidative damage, cellular turnover, and protein homeostasis was improved, and really age-related metabolic disorders such as obesity, insulin resistance, any kind of hypertension. And caloric restriction is well known. It's been actually decades of well-known research that show it increases the longevity in animal studies as well, and even in people too. We can see that the metabolic and molecular changes that happen with this really helps with the stress responsive pathways, you know, such as growth hormone and insulin-like growth factor. Those types of things on a very molecular and cellular level are improved. The second is the time-restricted eating, and that's what sometimes called, what we call here in the literature called peak fasting. And then what that does is it limits daily food intake to a narrow window of time without reducing caloric intake. And animal studies have shown that this strategy really helps reduce body weight, increase energy expenditure, improve glycemic control. That means your blood sugar level gets more stabilized, lowers insulin levels, and decreases hepatic, which we call hepatic is your liver for those of you that are new to the podcast. So it decreases liver fat and hyperlipidemia, as well as lowering inflammation. And according to the authors, they say, quote, the molecular mechanisms responsible for the effects of these altered meal patterns on metabolic health appears to be related, or at least in part, to a synchronization between the fasting feeding circadian rhythm that we possess. And there's a strong relation that exists between the circadian clock and metabolism, and they share common regulators. And that's where they see the benefits coming from the time-restricted. I would say time-restricted is very, very useful. I did those kinds of fasts for quite a while where I would stop eating at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I found remarkable results. But again, I wasn't in a position where I was working as many hours. So my lifestyle was a lot different. It depends on what your lifestyle is too when you're choosing a fast. So as I mentioned, the first one that we really talked about was caloric restriction, and that's just overall meals. Second is time restricted. Third is the intermittent fasting, where no or few calories are consumed for periods of time that range from 1 to several days. And that I'm not an advocate of, because what's going on now is people, what they're doing, an example is they alternate one day of fasting and one day followed by normal eating. I've also done those fasts too, and they disrupt the metabolism for my metabolic training on myself as well as in my PhD. In my graduate work, that really disturbs the metabolism of the individual, and it creates problems down the long run. But they do show in research that it boosts resistance to stress, you know, probably by shifting energy from growth and reproductive maintenance. That means your growth and sexual hormones to repair in order to increase cellular protection and survival. So in other words, I think it's going to create another problem for us in the long run. You know, short term things never show, but if people are doing this on end for years and years, I think you'll see a problem with that, especially on the day that they're doing the normal eating, they're eating junk food. I've known people that go crazy. They go wild after the day of fasting, eat all the food they want, junk food, and then they go back to fasting the next day. That doesn't work. It actually causes more damage to the system. So keep that in mind. So, and then the last one was partial fasting diets, which are known to maintain their physiological fasting-like state by reducing caloric intake. But then that's also by modifying diet composition, but it's not really necessarily fasting. And, you know, fasting, it's a kind of like a fasting mimicking diet, which you have low calories on plant-based soups, herbal teas, energy bars, nuts and snacks and supplements. And they do that in a 5-day cycle each month for 3 months. So you see, again, it's not developing a lifestyle. It's developing quick fixes without the whole picture. Remember, I called it soundbite technology. We get some of the information how I started in this whole podcast with fasting is very good. But what are all the other outliers that we're talking about when we're talking about fasting being good? What is your lifestyle like? What is your thought process? Why don't we just fast from talking for a day and see what that's like? So fasting comes in many, many forms. It means to withhold. So, and in this case, physical, the body goes into autolysis, self-digestion. Now, an overnight fast doesn't necessarily do that, except you do wake up and your body's working with free fatty acids, because your liver will have anywhere from 5 to 8 hours of glycogen, which is sugar storage, to really be used. So in the morning, you want to eat. And, you know, that's something to really think about. What you hear out on the web these days, be very, very careful. It's the soundbite technology, and you're not getting the whole picture. You're getting bits and pieces of the research put into these magnificent diets that are supposed to be the next best thing. And the problems you'll never see in the first 6 months. You'll see it in the probably after a year to 2 years, you'll see the problems coming up, if not sooner, but that's when you'll see it, because it's a cumulative effect on that. And you know, if you're going to do your own fasting, which I'm not advocating on this podcast, if you want to talk about fasting, set up an appointment with me and I will go over that with you and help you do your own with your practitioner, doctor-practitioner agreement. But I'm not going to advocate it on this just for reasons of not doing that. But I do want to say that contraindications and cautionary advice, you know, most people would likely benefit from a water fast. There are several absolute contradictions, even for a juice fast, which I used to advocate more than a water fast because we need the nutrients, especially today with so many toxins in the environment. This is not, you know, three decades ago where a water fast might be okay. We're so toxic now with chemicals that would be probably more detrimental to anyone. You know, people are underweight. They shouldn't be fasting. Malnourished, pregnant. There are many, you know, children shouldn't be fasting. You know, we have to just keep all of these things in mind. You know, one diet, one fast doesn't suit all. You know, anybody who's breastfeeding doesn't need to be fasting. I mean, I've heard some crazy things out there that really are more detrimental than actually helping the person. So I just wanted to mention that. You know, if you struggle with an eating disorder, I worked with eating disorders for many, many years with many athletes and professionals, and you don't advocate fasting. In fact, that's where the overnight fast came in, from really helping people overcome those kinds of things. It's not something that you want to be playing with because there's a problem. Also, if you're on any kind of medications, you can't just start saying, I'm going to start fasting, because drugs have an interaction. Some are more well absorbed with food, some are well absorbed without food. So you have to be very, very careful of not getting ulcers, stomach upset, or any type of utilization or absorption issues with fasting or not. And so you have to really be careful with medications. So the four strategies that I outlined, and they started with caloric restriction, intermittent fasting, partial fasting, and time-restricted fasting. I still advocate what we call the overnight fast, because that's something that took me years to develop, and I started it over two decades ago, and it's in all my books, and I counseled many, many people who are now out there advocating that. But it's still something where you're giving your digestive system a rest. You're also giving it the nutrients it needs during the day, and that's the key here. You have to give nutrients during the day so the detoxification pathways work overnight, and that's the key. You want those detox pathways to be working. Detox pathways only work if there's enough nourishment. That's when people do detox diets. I just look at it and my eyes roll, because if you don't have the nutrients to do the detox, how could you be doing the detox? The body needs energy to do detox. So you need to be able to synthesize and use both. You have to know what you're doing with all of these things in order to get the optimal results. And before ending today, I'd like to address some of the questions that came in from our last episode. And I'll read you some of the comments. Very interesting podcast on fasting. You mentioned when one's night's fast is over, you should not eat immediately, but no further information was given on the best way to come out of an overnight fast. Well, the best way to come out of an overnight fast is to give the body the liquids that it needs. So I prefer to use a lemon mix with, raw honey, and I put a lemon mix with raw honey. Sometimes I'll put a pinch, but not very rarely, or very rarely I do it, of some herb or spice in there. And I just drink enough liquid, warm, of course, room temperature or warmer, until my body cleanses itself. And then what I'll do is I eat around 10 a.m. when my metabolism kicks in. However, if somebody has to go to work at 8 a.m., I wouldn't tell them to wait till 10 a.m. I would say eat something before you get on the road. Again, each person is an individual. That's why it's very hard to make dietary advice a living with one diet for everyone, because everyone is so unique with their physical and mental biochemistry and their mind's metabolism that it takes real skill in orchestrating and tuning up that whole system for you in order to get the optimal nourishment and that you need for both the body and the brain. And then also, can you include that in your next podcast? Yes, I'm doing it now. And also, if you're not an early morning riser, could one's fast from 8 to 8 or 9 to 9 be the same 12 overnight fast, but be more individualized? Yes, we could talk about individualizing a fast. But remember, if you looked in my book, I believe it was in the book, Feeling Good Matters, where I talk about the metabolic channels and when is it best to take food in? When is it best to eliminate? So if you're getting up late at 9 a.m., and that's quite late because you're going to carry that kind of energy the rest of the day, just always keep that in mind, then I probably would wait till 10 a.m. when the metabolism gets highest. Metabolism is always highest between 10 and 2. Just follow the sun and that will tell you, and that's when your body's going to assimilate the most nutrients. However, if you're diabetic or you have some other issues, you might have to have something first thing in the morning, and you can do a diluted, I always say diluted fruit juice that's freshly prepared, because you don't want too much sugar in the system all at once. Again, it's individual. I would reach out and only say that's the best I can do on a podcast. And if you need more specific individual designing of that, I'd be more than happy to work with you. And that leaves us to the end of this episode. And I'd like to thank you for joining me. And please keep in mind, in 2 weeks, I'm going to be starting the new resilience training webinar series. And an online course that goes along with it, where you'll discover and reconnect to your own vitality. And I'll bring in the overnight fast in there, as well as some real practices of breathing, meditation, and those types of things that will actually build resilience. Keep in mind that the podcast does come out every week, and it's available on susantaylor.org, iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, as well as other podcast platforms. And again, visit susantaylor.org for more information and contact us with any questions. I enjoy them. I enjoy the feedback and the comments. I always enjoy them when they come in. I'm very happy for that. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm going to be adding some videos shortly there in the next few weeks. We're a little behind schedule because I left for India, but I'd be happy to really see all of you in the community supporting it. And until next time, as I always say, remain calm, consciously aware, living in the moment.